Hey, Leading Learning listener, if you represent a membership organization looking for ways to expand your online course catalog rapidly with high-quality content, we have good news.
At leadinglearning.com/AMA, you can find out how to make online training from the American Management Association available to your learners.
Through a partnership between AMA and Tagoras, the parent company of Leading Learning, you can give your learners access to more than 70 e-learning modules covering essential business topics ranging from leading and innovating to managing projects effectively to working in hybrid teams.
For details on how to grow your catalog with courses from a true global leader in management training, visit leadinglearning.com/AMA.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 113 of the Leading Learning Podcast. In this episode, we talk with Nick Schacht, Senior Vice President for Professional Development and Global Operations at the Society for Human Resource Management. Before we get to that interview, though, we want to highlight a resource as well as a new initiative that we've launched.
So, first for the new initiative, we've mentioned in recent episodes that we're collaborating with the folks at 100 Reviews to launch a new Review My LMS site. That site is now ready to go, and the first stage of making it as valuable as possible to you is to collect reviews. It works like this. If you contribute a review to the site, you get access to all of the other reviews on the site at no charge. The review process is really straightforward. Just go to reviewmylms.com, click Give a Review, and follow the instructions for completing the brief questionnaire. You'll get the satisfaction of helping out peers at other organizations, and you will also have continuing access to reviews of other systems as they come in.
While we're on the topic of Review My LMS, we want to be sure to thank the founding sponsors of that site. We feel like the ability to get high-quality, dependable reviews from peer organizations has been a gap in the association and broader learning business market for a time now. And so we're really excited to see that it will soon be filled with support from the following companies: Community Brands, Digitel, Next Thought, and Web Courseworks. We will link to each of those companies from the show notes for this episode, which you can find at leadinglearning.com/episode113. And if you're looking for a learning management system, we really encourage you to visit these companies and find out more about what they have to offer.
And I will mention that reviews have started coming in, so we're getting some there, and we look forward to seeing more added to it. And now, before we actually turn to the interview with Nick Schacht, given the nature of that discussion, we thought it would be a great time to point listeners again to our learning business maturity model as the resource for this episode. And the learning business maturity model gives you a framework, basically, for assessing the maturity of your learning business and then taking action to reach higher levels of maturity and performance. It may be just the thing if you're in the process of planning for the coming year, and you can download a copy for free simply by going to the show notes for this episode at leadinglearning.com/episode113.
All right, so that's the initiative and that's the resource. And so now to the interview. Jeff, both you and I had the chance to have an initial conversation with Nick Schacht, but you were the one who got to do the more formal interview for the podcast. What ground did the two of you cover?
Well, I think both of us knew when we were talking to Nick initially that we were having the kind of conversation that listeners at Leading Learning would want to be able to listen in on. In fact, I almost wish we had the recorder turned on during that conversation. We made that comment when we were talking to him. But, you know, Nick is at SHRM. He's in a very high-level role at SHRM. And SHRM, of course, is really kind of the mothership for human resources. I mean, it's a large organization, like 250,000-plus members out there. And so We covered a range of topics, as you might expect. Nick's in a position to really have a unique view on the types of topics that would be interesting to learners here. We talked about, for example, the evolving role of human resources, which that role really has changed quite a lot in organizations over the course of the last decade and perhaps longer than that. But you know, being an HR person these days is not what it used to be at all, and we talk about that. We talk about the role of HR in making education and training decisions, particularly important for organizations that are, you know, trying to sell into, for example, corporate America and need to be connecting with the right people around that. And then we also talked quite a bit about competency frameworks, both for individuals and organizations. And this is an area where it's clear Nick has a lot of interest, also has a lot of experience and some very good insights to offer. And then finally, of course, we also talk about some of the learning trends that that Nick finds most exciting. So, you know, all in all, there's a lot here in this conversation. I think that Leading Learning listeners are really going to enjoy it and get a lot out of it.
Without further ado, let's roll the interview with Nick Schacht.
Hello out there. I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Nick Schacht. Nick is Senior Vice President for Professional Development and Global Operations at the Society for Human Resource Management. And before joining SHRM, he held CEO and other C-level positions at a range of learning and development companies, including one he founded. So suffice to say, Nick has some great perspectives to offer on the business of learning. Nick, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. It's great to be here.
Well, we really appreciate you making the time, and I just barely scraped the surface there in talking about your background. You've had a long and distinguished career in this whole field of learning, development, training, education, and I'd be interested to know how did you wind up on the career path that you're on?
Pretty much accidentally, like a lot of people who get into this profession. And it's kind of hard to believe now looking back on it that I've been in this industry for more than three decades. I got into this the way a lot of people in learning and development get into it. I was doing some work, had some availability as a consultant, and somebody came to me and said, I have a course and I need an instructor. Can you do this for me? And I said yes and got myself into something that I really didn't think about ahead of time, but ended up doing my first class and loving it and ended up being here for the rest of my life, proverbially speaking. And just so you know, this can kind of happen to anybody. That first course was a five-day instructor-led class called Managing Idle Property for the U.S. Postal Service.
Oh, wow. That sounds like it's a very, very catchy title there, definitely.
Yeah, well, anyhow, but in spite of that, that got me into it.
Well, great. Well, and so now you have wound up at, basically the mothership for human resource professionals. And I noted that, you know, you have professional development and global operations in your title there. So, I mean, it sounds like you've got a pretty expansive role. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you do at SHRM?
Sure. And as you alluded to, Jeff, SHRM is the largest association in the world that is devoted to HR professionals. Our goal is to help HR professionals advance their careers, advance their organizations, and then advance the profession. So if we think of professional development in that regard, what we are hoping to do is to help HR professionals develop themselves throughout their careers to help meet the needs of their organizations, to learn and to grow as the profession advances, and we do that in a variety of ways. We do it through our meetings and our conferences, everything from the SHRM annual conference, which, you know, is a four-day event that has had more than 15,000 people attending this year and hundreds of track sessions, to smaller specialty conferences. We have a series of virtual and in-person instructor-led seminars. We have a number of e-learning products along with some online and digital assessments and organizational support tools. And then, as you alluded to with the global operations role, I've also got responsibility for our corporate engagement efforts, essentially B2B sales, and then our global operations as we have forums and education partners in more than 50 countries around the world.
So that's a lot that you're responsible for there. And you're particularly interesting as a guest on Leading Learning from my perspective, because you are on the one hand representing a learning provider. Obviously, SHRM, you know, provides a lot of education and learning opportunities. You've just described some of them. And then on the other hand, you're representative of a group of people who are often very involved in learning decisions within organizations, you know, who's going to be trained and how talent's going to be developed. And I want to cover both of those roles in the course of our conversation, but maybe to focus in on the second one first, that HR professional, the human resources professional. And, you know, my perspective is mostly an outsider on it, is that the HR role has really evolved quite a bit over the last decade or so, that it's viewed as a much more strategic role within organizations. And I'd love to hear your perspective on that, and then specifically how that relates into the role that HR plays in training and development as it happens these days within organizations.
Well, it's a quite a wide-ranging topic, Jeff. I mean, we got, what, a half an hour for this conversation?
I try to throw out the big questions for us to wrestle with. So.
No, that's actually good, and a good place to start. If you think about HR and where HR is today, I mean, I'm occasionally watching this cable series that's set back in the 1960s, and when somebody new gets hired, they say, take them down to personnel. Mm-hmm. And so if you just even think about that terminology, I mean, HR has evolved and has continued to evolve from simply personnel, which is very transactional, filling out forms and getting somebody on board and getting them signed up so they can get paid, to a wide range of functions and specifically competencies that really enable not only a service economy but a knowledge economy. Because as you think as how organizations have evolved in the last 50 years, especially, I mean, you can go back further, 100 years, but even in the last 50 years, where in the 1960s we were much more of a manufacturing economy with service sectors, we are now a very squarely a service economy with a very heavy focus on knowledge with some manufacturing sectors, and even the manufacturing sectors are affected by services and the management of knowledge and information. Accordingly, the people who populate our organizations are much, much more critical than any other asset, any other resource, any other component of what these organizations do. And so HR isn't just about finding people and getting them on board, although that still continues to be a huge part of the function. It's about making sure that an organization is looking for the right kind of talent, attracting that talent, and then developing that talent through a structured process that not only closes skills gaps today, but identifies the skills required for success tomorrow and provides development opportunities to close those skills gaps almost before they emerge. And so it's a much, much more strategic function, in part because the role of people in organizations today is much broader and much larger than in the old process and equipment-oriented economy that you might have seen a half a century ago. I mean, does that kind of get at some of what you're looking at here?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I definitely have the sense of, well, you know, talent development and talent management have been such buzzwords for a while now, and the HR professional is obviously right in the thick of it when it comes to terms like that, and making sure, as you said, it's not just about getting people on the bus, it's getting the right people on the bus and making sure that, you know, they're going to be good passengers and contributing to the journey of the organization. So that it's helpful to have that perspective. And then, you know, to go to the second part of what I was asking about, you know, if you're in the position of somebody who might be in the audience for this podcast listening in and thinking, you know, I've got learning and education offerings that I want to be able to take into an organization, an enterprise, a company, you know, whatever the target is, how do I now need to interface with the human resources professional in the first place? You know, what percentage of the time are they going to be leading decisions around training and development? What percentage are they going to be influencing or facilitating? And, you know, how do I convey to that HR person that I've got the right solution and I understand this role that they're now trying to play within the enterprise?
So that's it's a really interesting question. And if we were to go back 30 years when I started in this business, it was pretty clearly a sort of a 50-50 split in terms of what percentage of training in organizations was bought by HR versus what percentage was bought by everybody else. And so back at that point in time, HR was much more likely to be the organization that was going to buy all of your commoditized training. So compliance training, for example, mm-hmm. or maybe generic leadership development programs, or basic communication skills, things relating to generic and general employee onboarding and that sort of thing. Where in the functional organizations, you got training purchased that was in support of specific projects or specific programs. So, for example, a program in developing contract managers would be bought by a contracting group. A program in developing project managers might be bought by a technical function or cross-functional group that was set up to improve the management of projects in an organization, and so on. And so you had this sort of division of, if we want to turn to the language of competencies, had this division of basic competencies that everybody's got to have, which again reinforces the transactional stereotyped image of HR, to the more strategic competencies focusing on specific product lines or projects that had a more strategic importance to the organization. Now, that was 30 years ago. If we look at where we are going, even in today's economy, in today's organizations, HR professionals are often seen as HR people who are working hard to learn the business in which they operate. But where they see themselves going and where the profession is likely to end up is HR people are business people and senior business leaders who happen to have HR expertise. And so if you think about the role of a business leader in an organization or a business partner in an organization, that is an individual who is looking at what is the focus of the business, what's the strategic plan, what's the operating plan, what are the immediate targets that we have to achieve, and how do we structure the part of the organization for which I'm responsible in support of those goals. And if you think now about what HR professionals are more likely to be doing in the context of buying training or buying learning and development, to put it at that level, it's going to be much more set around the application of consistently, constantly changing competency models across a wide range of organizational functions and organizational skill sets, ranging from engineering to IT to sales to general management. So you'll bridge those, what we're seeing as transactional or essential pieces of HR's learning and development responsibility from decades ago through what the organization needs to be successful today, but even more importantly tomorrow, because with technology changing as quickly as it's changing and the application of that technology changing quickly, organizations that are going to be successful have to anticipate what skills and competencies they're going to have to be competitive in 5 years. And so HR can be a key strategic player in that process if the learning development process is positioned appropriately and accordingly. So that's how I would look at it. So if you're a provider of learning and development, don't think of yourself as a provider of a static set of products or courses or e-learning modules or something like that. Rather, look at yourself in the context of what competencies are you enabling individuals to develop, and how are those competencies evolving over time, and how are you then helping to position your clients to meet the evolving needs for competencies in their organizations?
And so that would suggest that if you are a learning provider of some sort, you really need to develop an understanding of what competency models an organization is working with in the first place if you're going to be able to go in and effectively sell whatever you're offering. It becomes a much more, I guess, consultative type of sale than a transactional sort of sale.
Well, it does. I mean, look, there are still going to be those transactional sales. So if you think about it, from the standpoint of, cybersecurity compliance. I mean, you could say, look, there's a pretty standard set of courses that you need there, pretty standard set of knowledge and skills for today because they'll change tomorrow. But you can go off and sell those and perhaps not worry a whole heck of a lot about cybersecurity competency models, except in the context of cybersecurity professionals, you know, the people who are on the cutting edge of this. But in general, what I would say is that learning and development professionals as providers need to be competent in the concept of competency models. And in the vocabulary of competency models, they need to be able to understand how you use a competency-based framework as a lens to identify and view and direct training and development. So while they may not necessarily specifically be knowledgeable in the competency models used by a specific customer organization, they need to be prepared to go in and have the conversation with the organization around how are you identifying the competencies that are required for the given, you know, given segments of your population, and do you have a model for managing the development of those competencies? And if so, what does that look like? What do you need? Where are you going? I mean, all of those types of questions then follow on from there. And being prepared to engage at a peer level or as a leader in that conversation, as opposed to somebody who just gives a blank stare when the discussion is brought up, will inevitably position people for greater success.
Right. And you and I had a very interesting conversation before the one we're having today, and we talked a good bit about competencies, and you made an interesting distinction between the individual competency model that tends to be used within an organization and then an overall organizational competency framework. Can you talk a little bit about that distinction and how that plays out within organizations?
Sure. So an individual competency model is at its core a set of competencies which can be deconstructed into specific activities or behaviors that may that evolve with different levels of maturity for an individual in a specific role. And the competencies by themselves don't help you a whole lot, but when you combine them and configure them into job profiles, you can then say for this job profile, an individual needs these competencies in these measures, and those measures will be different depending upon what the specific competencies are. And then you can go out and measure an individual's actual existing competency against the desired competencies, say here are the skills gaps or here are the competency gaps, and develop a plan to close those gaps or develop a hiring plan to go off and find somebody who meets the job profile or whatever. So that tells you what an individual must be able to do to perform a role in an organization. Adding up a whole bunch of individual competencies does not add up to organizational competency. Organizational competencies are something else altogether. If you think about what organizations do, the analog to individual behaviors is organizational practices. And so really in a complete competency ecosystem, you'll have an individual competency model which identifies the behaviors required of individuals in specific roles, and you'll have an organizational competency model which defines the practices in which an organization needs to be competent to succeed both strategically and tactically. And that's going to be based on a number of different things, but it'll be based in part on what's the state of the art in the industry, or where is an industry going with regard to a particular competency area, how well is the organization performing those practices that it's decided that it's going to be implementing, and so on. The bottom line is that the individual and the organizational, are inextricably linked, in that for an organization to be excellent in its practice, it requires competent practitioners, and those are the individuals with the specific behavioral-driven competencies.
And so I would be intrigued to know then, we've talked about how the role of the HR professional has evolved, and the HR professional, of course, is who you serve, and then the idea of individual competencies, the idea of organizational competency frameworks. How has all of this informed what SHRM itself is doing as a learning provider? How has it impacted your own strategy and tactics in that area?
So what we have a history that begins with the individual competency model. A number of years ago, Sherm developed our own body of competency and knowledge, which is our individual competency framework, which has formed a basis for the Sherm CP and Sherm SCP certifications, which we now offer for HR professionals. And so those have exactly the role that that I've laid out here. They define the behavioral and functional competencies for HR professionals across a wide range of interpersonal behaviors and technical competencies. And when I say technical, I mean HR technical. So everything from talent acquisition to compensation and benefits to learning and development and a whole host of other functions performed by HR. What we're beginning to take a look at now is what is the organizational framework in which those individual competencies are applied, and how do organizations themselves determine the level of their HR performance overall. And that then goes right back to the creation of an organizational competency framework of some form. And, you know, we're still in the very, very early stages of talking about this and thinking about this. So I don't really have anything that that I could show or metaphorically describe, I guess, in the way of pictures or diagrams or even defined vocabulary yet. But I would predict that in the coming time periods, we will see something like that emerging, and that will then provide us this umbrella within which these competent HR practitioners can function with a very clear strategic direction and mandate.
And to achieve what you're trying to achieve, I mean, you've obviously got a large, you know, a global group of members that you're trying to serve. I'm wondering, and I know you're, you know, relatively new to Sherm, but I mean, how much has technology made possible around something like, you know, managing competencies, managing what you're talking about, that maybe just wasn't possible 30 years ago? You've given that as a point of reference. I mean, could what you're talking about now really have been done 30 years ago, or is technology really making it much more possible to do that now?
Well, could it have been done 30 years ago? Yeah, but it would have required a lot of people with a lot of pencils and very large sheets of paper.
Right.
I mean, yeah, because that's, I mean, look, the first part of my career, I was in the Navy's nuclear propulsion program. And when they built the very first nuclear powered submarine, they had a whole bunch of clerks, basically accounting clerks, sitting down with Marchand calculators, which were the ones that had the punch numbers on the top of them and the little handle that you pulled each time you wanted to execute an operation. They were using that to calculate nuclear flux inside a nuclear reactor core. And for the first nuclear submarine core, they calculated a total of 3 flux points inside the core, and that was deemed enough to get that thing safely to sea. You fast forward a number of decades, and of course you're using computers to model nuclear flux throughout the core in an incredibly sophisticated way. So the short answer is, yeah, you could have done it, but it would have been primitive, and you wouldn't have the benefit of the incredible amounts of information that we do have out there, not just in terms of identifying individual job profiles and assessing individual competency gaps and then tracking those, because there are systems that are set up to do that in conjunction with learning management systems, but also in terms of accumulating the vast amounts of data regarding what organizations are doing, and more importantly, what the impact of what those organizations are doing is with regard to organizational performance, and collecting that data on an ongoing basis and organizing it and presenting it and so on. The automated tools we have at our disposal make it much easier not only to perform those tasks, but for people, individuals, to get meaningful reports or visualizations of the information out of those systems in a way that helps you look at not only what, you know, how are we doing today, but 6 months from now, what's changed. And to do that, you know, I don't want to oversimplify, but to do it relatively easily compared to the incredible amount of manual work that would have been required previously. So yeah, the tools help us a lot.
And I guess that really gets to the root of my question, just what's possible now with respect to gathering the data, parsing the data, being able to then use the data in meaningful ways. And obviously technology has just, you know, changed fundamentally what we're able to do as far as that goes. And so I mean, we've touched just now on technology, sort of broadly speaking. We've talked a bit about competencies, which really has been, it seems like a fast evolving area. A lot of organizations focused much more on competency models. What are some other trends that you're seeing out there, you know, whether that's emerging practices, technologies, whatever the science is showing? In general, what really has you excited right now when you think about what's possible in the field of learning and development?
I think what has me excited are a couple of different things. The first is our ability to increasingly simulate the environments within which people work. I mean, on the technical side, look, we can simulate an information system environment really, really well and provide all kinds of learning opportunities around that. But we're getting increasingly able to simulate what happens in the non-technical aspects of the job, of any job as well. Some of that has to do with the application of artificial intelligence, because as AI becomes more sophisticated, you know, 5 years from now, it's going to be questionable as to whether you'll be able to tell whether you're talking to an automated attendant or you are, or you're talking to a real person, up to some level of conversation, right? And the more information that's fed into an AI system, the more that automated attendant will be able to anticipate and provide you information that you need or help you with your questions or what have you. Now, if you combine that with adaptive learning, which is something else that I'm really excited about, you then create learning and development systems which get really, really smart at figuring out how competent is an individual in a specific area and providing them the level of learning and the level of learning and development they need to develop a desired competency as efficiently as possible. So instead of, you know, making everybody go through 101, then 102, then 103, you know, maybe you need, you know, 5 minutes of 101 and then 2 days of 102, you can concentrate your time on 103 to get to a desired level of competence. And you've saved your time, you've saved the organization's time and the organization's money. And overall, everybody's happier as a result. And this is important in a time when we're constantly going to be needing to learn new and different things. So, I mean, as I think about the future, that's what I see the future holding. We're still, you know, a number of years from that. But on the other hand, the more I read about AI developing AI, maybe we're not that far off. Who knows?
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems like the ability to adapt in the way that you're talking about is also going to drive the need to adapt. I mean, it seems like artificial intelligence and what it's going to enable machines to do is probably going to fundamentally change the competency map in a lot of organizations, because many of those lower level competencies can be filled in by machines, by artificial intelligence, which is going to change what humans need to be able to do and drive the need for them to adapt to those new roles. So very, very exciting times with what's possible now with the technology.
Well, I think that's entirely true. And I mean, look, you can, I'll give you a very simplistic mechanical example where we may bypass some competencies altogether. 100 years ago, you started a car by cranking it and turning a crank in the front of the car. Then as as we move through the decades, you had to choke it and you'd press the starter button on the floor. Then you might choke it and turn a key. Then you just turn a key. Now you get in the car and the key's in your pocket or in your purse or whatever, and you just push a button. We don't need to crank cars. We don't need to know where the starter button is or to choke an automobile engine anymore in order to get it started. You can see the same analogies with computer programming languages and so on. So you're right. After a while, the tools get better, and then after a while, we even bypass the need for certain types of tools. So I would agree with you completely.
Well, and while we're on this topic of adapting and evolving, we always like to ask our guests about their own practices when it comes to adapting and evolving. And a question I'd like to put to you that we've started asking all of the guests on Leading Learning is, what's one of your own most powerful learning experiences that you've been involved in specifically as an adult, you know, since finishing your formal education?
I'll tell you, and you're going to be very surprised by this, but it's because one of the things we can never forget is that we are humans and we do not evolve that quickly. And we are always dealing with the human. And that is doing driver's ed with my daughter, who is now almost 18 years old. But a couple of years ago, just before she turned 16 in Texas, where we were living, you're allowed to do parent-taught driver's ed. And parent-taught driver's ed consists of an online program that the student needs to go through and that the parent needs to go through some of, followed by a minimum of 40 hours of behind-the-wheel training, where you as the parent get to do the ride-along white-knuckle thing. And the reason that this was so powerful for me as a learning experience was, first, it was hybrid or blended learning or whatever you want to call it. It was using technology to not only to convey information, but also to elicit a certain amount of genuine understanding on my daughter's part as she was going through the online program. But then the actual participation in developing her skills, her hands-on skills, and her awareness, her situational awareness of where she was, what she was doing, what other people around her were doing, was a kind of a unique encapsulation of how much learning is the same and yet how much it has changed since I took driver's ed 40 years before she did. And some of it, it's the same because it's the same human thing. You've got a person who's better than you at something, who is helping you along with something, but you've also got different levels of technology in the vehicle. You've got different levels and different types of preparation. The preparation for her was much more active than the classes I remember sitting in, which were sleepers. She had to actively be doing things and she had to actively engage in some situational simulations. And so we'd have discussions when we were on the road in her behind the wheel time of, oh yeah, so that's what they meant by that. Or when she's driving downtown in the middle of a thunderstorm at 8 o'clock at night and the car starts to skid to one side and she says, oh, that's what they mean about the rear wheel slipping out from you. And it was just, for me, a very, very powerful learning experience because it was so human, because the technology was woven in seamlessly. And yet I can see very much the results and the fact that it was very, very personal results, because I'm sure my experience with her was as unique to us as anybody else's experience with their own child would have been.
That's great. I love that. I've had many experiences with my own kids, kind of covering ground, as you're saying, that I covered myself at some point in the past, and they're not old enough to drive yet, but we're getting there. And, different things day in and day out. It might be homework or something else. And, the context is different. The personalities are different. The technology is different. I'm different. And you really do have to take into account that human component. I mean, that's what it's all about when it comes right down to it. Well, Nick, it's been fantastic having the opportunity to talk with you. Before we wrap up, where can listeners go to find out more about SHRM and what you're up to there? And then are there ways that they can connect with you online?
Absolutely. They can go to SHRM at www.shrm.org. That's SHRM.org. They can get me at nshacht@shrm.org. So that's NSCHACHT at shrm.org, or on LinkedIn. Just look for Nick Schacht. And if you're looking Nick Schacht Learning and Development, I will probably show up on your screen.
I believe that is true, because I did that and you did in fact show up. So Nick, thanks again for showing up today for this episode of Leading Learning.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Jeff.
That concludes our interview with Nick Schacht. To get show notes for this episode, go to leadinglearning.com/episode113. While you're there, you'll see a link for Review My LMS. If your organization uses a learning management system, we really urge you to get over to Review My LMS, leave a review, help your peers at other organizations make a good choice when they're faced with selecting an LMS.
And while you're there, you will also see the various options for subscribing to the podcast. And as always, we like to say that if you are getting value out of the podcast, we would be truly grateful if you would click that subscribe button on whatever service you use to get your podcast.
We'd also be grateful if you would take just a minute to give us a rating on iTunes. To do that, go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. That takes you to the right place. We would really appreciate 5 stars from you and a brief text review of what you find interesting and valuable in the podcast. It makes us feel good to know that we're helping you, and it helps others to find the podcast.
And last but not least, please consider telling others about the podcast. You can send out a tweet. We've made that easy for you. All you have to do is go to leadinglearning.com/share, and that will automatically pop up a tweet that you can just click send on and get it out to the world. Or if tweeting isn't your thing, you can take the text there or some words of your own, put them into any social network of your choice, whether that's LinkedIn, Facebook, wherever you hang out. But let the world know about Leading Learning.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.